the open savanna parkland of earlier this morning had changed to stands of marula and knobthorn and acacia, with groves of raisin bush and sickle bush and shrub acacia and bush willow. Progress with the vehicle had become a twisting torture through the thickets. It was hot and dry and dusty. I got enclosed in a cocoon of scraping and cracking and thumping and battling the unwilling steering wheel, or getting out to chop or clear or fill obstacles or unclogging radiator screens. My senses were being saturated and numbed. The deep pool of shade beneath this time-ravaged tamburti was just too inviting to pass by. It was time for some respite from the tense struggle of breaking through the bush. I stood down from the seat, and for a moment I let the cool silence envelop me. Even the cicadas seemed to give me a break. I was tempted to just sit down and soak up the stillness and the coolness, but I had to check the vehicle first and get stuff ready for my brunch. Afterwards, when I had settled down with a cup of tea, I indulged in the quiet. Over the soft rustle of the tamburti leaves above me, there were only the faraway doodle of a wood dove and the drawn-out whistle of a black-crowned chagra. They sounded lonely and melancholic, and it made the silence more real. It felt as if it actually touched me, wanted to remind me of how immense it was, how exposed I was to a world I knew relatively little of. For a moment, I felt uncertainty, but there was also exhilaration. Any combination of forces that I would be hard put to survive could, in a split second, burst forth from the quiet. Or there could be nothing, just this immense silence and the slow turn of day and night, of heat and coolness, and me working myself deeper into the wilderness and then out again, with not much happening apart from the many thoughts that would have passed through my mind. The uncertainty of this boundless universe of possibilities and the arcane dynamics that might or might not make them unfold, the danger that it always faintly reeks of, are what fascinates and addicts me. And being alone in it, makes it intensely personal. What I think of it, how I relate to it, how I bring it into context with the wider world that I am aware of, even my mutterings to myself do not go beyond my immediate aura, or perhaps, I should rather say, beyond my own awareness. For there may be awareness of me here that I am not even aware of. Be that as it may, I am answerable for it only to my own conscience and sensibilities, and I must bear the consequences of how I deal with the situation. It immensely intensifies the sentience even of small routine actions like cleaning and putting away equipment, or checking the vehicle, or rehearsing my emergency actions in my head before allowing myself to doze off. Indeed, of my body itself, the feel of the air movement over it, and its state right now, in an almost clinical sense, the numbness of fatigue in the muscles, its capacity for more or immediate action, the sharpness of the very mind. The experience, however fast or slow moving, however dangerous or mundane, becomes the thing in itself. The experience becomes the experience. Could I tolerate someone with me? I could, and I have, and mercifully, it had been mostly pleasant. But it is different. There is no real substitute for solitude. I am reminded of a poem by Mary Oliver. How I Go to the Woods, by Mary Oliver. Ordinarily, I go to the woods alone, with not a single friend, for they are all smilers and talkers, and therefore unsuitable. I don't really want to be witnessed talking to the catbirds or hugging the old black oak tree. I have my own way of praying, as you no doubt have yours. Besides, when I am alone, I can become invisible. I can sit on the top of a dune as motionless as an uprise of weeds, until the foxes run by unconcerned. I can hear the almost unhearable sound of the roses singing. If you've ever gone to the woods with me, I must love you very much.